This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Joyful, joyful.
You're in the Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9 with the
Priest,
the Pom,
and the Poof.
This is the show where we talk about spirituality and sexuality for our community.
And it's a very good evening, and yes, you are with the Priest, the Pom, and the Poof. That is so exciting. We're all here and present.
We are.
And I don't know about correct.
It's quite an achievement.
I know. Don't worry, just hang on. Next week I'll be gone again.
And so. Where have you been, Priesty? What have you been doing?
Oh, you know me. I just swan off to the bushfires or swan off to something else, you know.
With a hose and a bucket?
No, they don't let me have a hose. SES people don't have hoses. I have my orange uniform.
Actually, I was looking out for you because I was coming back from Daylesford last night and...
No, we weren't the fires in Gippsland.
No, luckily there were no fires up there. But the SES were doing something slightly odd. They had this kind of place on the side of the freeway and they were giving away free coffee.
Yes, you do coffee breaks.
Yeah, and they, what was that to promote, sort of take a pan out?
Safe driving,
kind of
yeah. When I was in Port Ferry, we used to do coffee breaks. It was great fun.
Cool.
And we used to sit there and feed people awful coffee, lovely coffee.
Anyway, we hurtled past and missed it, but it was a good idea.
You've got to stop and have a little chat. I love long drives when you do get to.
When we were in Port Ferry, we had a guy who stopped and he was a little bit confused. He said he was driving to Tasmania. We were a bit concerned about that.
Anyway, we have a busy program as always. Let's get on with it. We have two guests tonight. We have Rebecca Forgas, who is the director and CEO of the Jewish Museum of Australia, and we're going to be talking about her latest exhibition, which all sounds very exciting. Stay tuned to hear more. And we have Stuart Soley with us from St. Mark's Anglican Church in Fitzroy, who's going to tell us everything about what they're doing for Midsummer. But let's kick off with a little number. Joy, would you like to introduce it, darling, as it's yours?
Yes, this is a lovely... I've been looking for some new music, and this is a woman called Plum, and this is a beautiful track called In My Arms.
Joy 94.9.
And you're with the Priest, the Pom and the Poof on the Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9. We're here every Tuesday from 8 till 9 exploring sexuality and spirituality. Now we have two guests in our studio tonight. The first guest, her name is Rebecca Forgas, Director and CEO of the Jewish Museum of Australia here in Melbourne. Rebecca has previously curated five major exhibitions, including Women in the Bible, Tricksters, Victors and Mothers, and Diaspora, Homelands in Exile. Rebecca completed a Master's in Jewish Studies at Oxford University in 2003, where she wrote a gender-bending dissertation on her biblical namesake entitled Rebecca the Patriarch, Feminist and Rabbinic Readings of the Biblical Character of Rebecca. Now, as part of Midsummer Fest, the museum is running an event called Queer Readings of the Bible, complemented by their current exhibition called Epic, 100 Years of Film and the Bible, which explores the fascination that filmmakers from all over the world constantly have with the Bible. Rebecca is speaking as part of the event and is here now. Good evening.
Hello.
Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Now, lots to talk about. Queer Readings of the Bible, part of this larger exhibition. What inspired the Jewish Museum to put this on in the first place?
Well, I was just, I always kind of hunt around on the internet and just search for different exhibition ideas that are happening, and often look overseas, particularly in the States, of what's happening over there and things we might be able to bring over here. And I came across this exhibition, which originally was at a museum called the Museum of Biblical Art in New York. Mm-hmm. And I love the look of it. And particularly for me, for the Jewish Museum, what we try to do is not just to present Jewish history, but also to present contemporary Jewish culture and life, and to show kind of Jewish history and tradition in a way that's relevant to contemporary audiences. So I loved this exhibition because it kind of took the Bible out of a strictly religious context. And I guess people would often expect when they see something about the Bible in a Jewish museum that it would be sort of talking about it in a kind of very reverent way in its religious context. And I like this because it kind of positioned the Bible in the context of broader Western and popular culture, and kind of, I guess, gives a point of entry and a way of accessing the Bible, which is, of course, central to Jewish culture, for people who might not otherwise kind of engage with the Bible per se. Mm. So I thought it was a great one for us to have at the Jewish Museum.
So the footage that you're showing, is this new or is it existing film and you're sort of giving a different bent or angle on it?
Yeah, yeah. The material in the exhibition is actually mostly movie posters. So it's an exhibition about film, but the way that it's represented that is through dozens of vintage movie posters. And as well as posters, there are programs and publicity material and stills from the movies, and it all comes from what we've actually just got is the tip of the iceberg of the private collection of a guy, Father Michael Morris, who's an academic at the Graduate Theological Union in Berkeley in California, and he's had this fascination for a long time with film and religion, and he's got this enormous collection of all sorts of material to do with film and religion and the Bible in particular. So we just borrowed a very small part of his collection, and we're showing it at the museum. So it's all existing material that we're showing.
Do all of the works that you're showing, do they all have a queer bent?
No, in fact, very few of them do. Well, this is what was interesting. It was funny, a volunteer of ours at the museum said to me the other day, he said, "So, Rebecca, what does this topic of queer readings of the Bible have to do with this exhibition?" So I tried to explain to him. So it's really interesting. There's not that much. There's a film in the exhibition about a poster in the exhibition from a film, which was a 1960s production about Sodom and Gomorrah, and you would think there that there would be some in that film some representation of homosexuality, but there's not. The sin that's kind of the way that the sin of the people of Sodom and Gomorrah is presented there is just a kind of generic sexual sin. It's not referred to at all. And sort of in the golden era of filmmaking in Hollywood, it was of course really difficult for anything to do with homosexuality but to be represented. But there's one poster in particular of a film called La Bibbia, which is a joint American and Italian production, which has this great image of Cain and Abel. And Father Michael writes in the label text he wrote about the poster that there's this naked homoeroticism in the imagery in the poster. So I guess that's what inspired us. Aside from that, there's very little that's specifically about homosexuality, but that particular poster, we kind of grabbed onto it and said, let's go from there.
So apart from Father Michael Morris, what other are there other famous kind of filmmakers and artists who've contributed to the exhibition?
Yeah, well, I mean, as I said, it's a collection mostly of vintage material from old films. So it's his private collection. Mm. But in terms of the films that are represented in the exhibition, I mean, there are a lot of famous, you know, filmmakers who are really attracted to making these films. So one of the most well-known ones is The Ten Commandments, which was made, of course, by Cecil B. DeMille and starred the legendary Charlton Heston and Yul Brynner. One of the films, 1920s production of Noah's Ark, was by the director Michael Curtiz, who became much more famous in 1943 as the director of Casablanca. Mm-hmm. And there was a recent film made by Bruce Beresford, the Australian-born director, which starred Richard Gere as King David. So there are some pretty well-known actors and directors that make appearances in the films that we depict there.
Mm. You're in the Spirit Lounge, you're on Joy 94.9, and we're speaking with Rebecca Forgas, who is the Director and CEO of the Jewish Museum of Australia.
Joy 94.9.
And you're on the Spirit Lounge with the Priest, the Pom, and the Poof. And that was Corin Bailey Ray with Breathless. And I'm told she... No, where's she from?
She's from the UK. Yeah, she's quite big in the UK. I was just asking you if you'd heard of her over here, but I don't think she's reached these shores yet.
Well, I'm not, you know, up with the latest.
Ah, but so. I thought you were.
Oh, no.
You anyway. Come up with all these artists that I've never heard of.
You just come up with the same artist every week. We won't go into that.
Now, children.
Now, we're talking to Rebecca Forgas, who's the director and CEO of the Jewish Museum of Australia here in Melbourne. Rebecca, do filmmakers take a bit of creative license when they sort of convert the Bible to film? What happens?
Yes, they do. There's quite a broad spectrum in terms of the films that we've got represented in the exhibition. There are some that are quite faithful to the biblical text, and there are others that do take quite a bit of creative license. So the one that I always think of is the Ten Commandments, which is one that's so well known and I love. I grew up watching it every year when it was on TV. And, you know, when I think of that one, there's, you know, basically the core of it, the story is as it is in the Bible, but there's some elements of it that are really just made up. So the whole kind of much of the life of Moses growing up in Pharaoh's court, the romance between Moses and Nefertiti's rivalry with Ramses when they were young, none of those are in the story itself. But, you know, I think there's in Jewish tradition, there's a real kind of tradition in interpreting the Bible, of kind of creative interventions
Midrash,
into the biblical
text.
That's right. And so, yeah. You know, there's often, like, the Bible is often so sparing in the words that it uses to tell the story. So you can have these huge monumental kind of narratives that are told in so few words, you can almost miss it. And so there's this tradition of creating Midrash, of filling in the gaps in the narrative, of thinking about characters' motivations. And so I really think that, in a way, these films are like a form of contemporary Midrash. And I think that as readers of the Bible, we often depend on artists and filmmakers to kind of give the colour and the detail and the gaps in the stories that aren't necessarily there in the text itself.
And the subjects that are featured in the exhibition, are they just focusing on the Hebrew Bible or the Old Testament, or is there some that's been included from the New Testament as well?
Yep. Well, in the original exhibition that was in New York and in Father Michael's collection, his collection spans films that also deal with stories from the New Testament. When we were making the decision to have the exhibition at the Jewish Museum, just because of the context of being the Jewish Museum, we kind of decided to have as our boundary the films that dealt with the Hebrew Bible, just because that's the kind of part of the Bible that's canonical and authoritative in the Jewish tradition. So it was kind of just helped us. There was so much stuff and so much to choose from that kind of just helped us make the decisions as well about what to include.
You would have cut out quite a portion of his collection, I imagine.
Absolutely. There was a lot we left out.
At least we didn't have to have Mel Gibson.
No, that's right. But we got Richard Gere.
Now, Queer Readings of the Bible is described as a freewheeling conversation playing with the fascinating and challenging ideas of homosexuality and homoeroticism that are found in various biblical stories. So how does that happen? Do you actually sit and tell stories or have a debate about that? Or what's that part of the exhibition like?
Yeah, well, in the exhibition itself, we don't do that much, but in this program that we're running, which is part of Midsummer, we are going to be looking at some specific ways that you can kind of... specific ways of reading, kind of queering the biblical text, I guess, various queer kind of reading strategies for approaching the Bible. And so I'm going to be looking at, in my presentation, I'm going to be dealing with the notorious text of Leviticus 18, that, you know, prohibits male homosexuality, or something a little bit more specific, and which I'll be talking about on the night.
So you're
and
going to be reinterpreting it.
That's right. So we're looking at that. One of the other speakers, Roland Bohr, who's an academic whose area is kind of critical theory and biblical studies, is going to be looking at a couple of other approaches to text. He's going to be looking at Song of Songs as an example of how ambiguities in the text itself, in even things like about what gender isn't always specific, open the text up to queer possibilities as well. Mm-hmm. So there's a whole lot of different approaches, and we're going to be looking at some particular examples of how to do that.
Is anyone going to look at stories like David and Jonathan and their relationship to each other. Is that?
Yeah, I think I'm going to mention it in passing. So David and Jonathan and Ruth and Naomi, these, you know, great stories that we see kind of real models for love and relationships between the same sex in the Bible. There's a beautiful little collection of contemporary Midrash that was written, which finds all these kinds of cracks and hints in biblical narratives, even when it's not as obvious as those ones, and where the author. So I'm hoping actually to have a chance to just do some reading of stories of those ones if we have time.
There's
on
a
the
cheeky
night.
Little glint in your eye.
Yeah,
when
just
that. It's
wonderful. Gorgeous story.
I mean, do you think the author of the Song of Solomon and other passages meant to be homoerotic, or
look, I don't know.
I mean, I like to think they might
have. I do. Well, I think that sometimes they did. I mean, I know some people react with horror that at the idea that there were gay people in biblical times, but clearly there were, and I think that sometimes it was intended. I think sometimes it wasn't, and I think in most of the cases it's really just impossible for us to ever know.
So in biblical times, do you reckon that there – do you think gay and lesbian life was quite promiscuous or under the covers, or what do you think it was like?
Well, it was obviously going on because if there's one thing, you know, if there's a prohibition in the Bible, then one sure thing you know is that people were doing it. otherwise, there's no need to make a law prohibiting it. So it was certainly happening. They're actually not so much in the Bible, but in the rabbinic tradition, there are the most extraordinary stories. I was just reading one about a story from the Talmud where a rabbi said he actually was a witness to two men having sexual intercourse. And the whole idea is that according to Leviticus 20, the men are both meant to be put to death, but you need two kosher witnesses to have witnessed it for that to happen. And apparently these guys turned to the rabbi and says, hey, there's two of us and only one of you, so what are you going to do about it? So, I mean, and this is in the Talmud, which is kind of this great authority compilation of Jewish law, and the stuff that's – there's some fantastic stuff in there.
Oh, they just might have said, do you want to join in?
Yeah, that's
There are lots of conflicting interpretations of what the Bible says about homosexuality. What's the one thing that you've learned from running this exhibition about their interpretation, what it really says about homosexuality?
Well, from really my kind of reading and study and exploration of this topic from over years, and I guess first of all, this one thing is that the Bible itself doesn't mention lesbians, which some lesbians go, woohoo, we kind of go under the radar there. But in terms of the prohibition specifically in Leviticus about male homosexuality, I think it kind of some contemporary commentators, and particularly there's one gay Orthodox, openly gay Orthodox rabbi, who says that that prohibition is actually about a particular sexual act. It's not about homosexuality in general. So I think through, you know, and he uses very traditional approaches and ways of approaching the text and reading the text, and he comes to this conclusion and he says we really should be much more open and much more you know, accepting of the possibility of same-sex physical and sexual desire. Although we do need to accept that the Bible clearly does say that some sexual acts are prohibited, but it does the same in relation to straight sex as well. So my view would be that there are particular sexual acts that are prohibited, but I don't think homosexuality per se.
This exhibition we hear closes soon. How can people have, you know, turn up, and what, when and where and what? Yeah.
The exhibition is closing on Sunday, the 3rd of February. This particular event that we have running, Queer Readings of the Bible, is happening at the museum, which is in Alma Road in St Kilda, on Thursday evening at 6:30. So we'd love to have people come along. People can visit our website, www.jewishmuseum.com.au, or the Midsummer website to book online for that event.
Fantastic. Can they turn up and buy tickets, or better to book?
Better to book, but if you don't get a chance, you're very welcome to just turn up. And the museum will be open from 5 o'clock before the program starts if people want to have a look at the exhibition as well.
Okay.
Fantastic. Well, thank you for joining us in the studio. You're on the Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9.
You are on Joy 94.9. You're in the Spirit Lounge tonight. And if you'd like to join the conversation, please send us a text message, 0427 Joy 949.
We want to know that we're loved.
We'd love that.
So actually what we mean is anyone out there?
Yes.
Now, we've got a very special guest in the studio, Friar Stuart Solly. St. Mark's Anglican Church in Fitzroy joyfully celebrate the Christian faith in the Anglo-Catholic tradition and take great delight in the beauty of ritual, music and topical preaching. The parish also has a strong tradition of service to the community, which dates back to the 1890s, running a community centre, providing food parcels and other material aid, snacks, counselling, recreational facilities for hundreds of disadvantaged men, women and families. During the Midsummer Festival, St. Mark's is holding a special mass, and here to tell us more about it is Friar Stuart Solly. Welcome to the Spirit Lounge.
It's lovely to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Now, can you tell us, what is it about St. Mark's which makes it a safe place for the GLPDI community?
Well, there's a few things. One is that about 40% of the congregation are gay or lesbian. I did these stats just at the end of last year.
Did you do a survey after church?
No, look, I just did it from my own knowledge of people. And then there was a group of people who I really couldn't decide what they were. So I then put in my report that there were some, those who is their business alone of what their sexual orientation was. So it's about 40%, which is a good number for an Anglican parish. It's been a safe place probably since the 1970s, I think, where there have been gay component of the congregation. In the 1980s and 90s, there was a great ministry to those who were suffering from HIV/AIDS, and so there were the annual AIDS requiems. And that really gave the soul to the parish. And there was this wonderful blend, not only of the gay and lesbian people, but with straight people as well. They all owned this aspect of its life. And so it's built from, you know, quite strong roots to that.
So what sort of inspired you to create a mass for the Midsummer Festival?
Well, in a sense, we've inherited this. In 1996, another Anglican parish, St. Agnes's Glen Huntly, started what they called a Dorothy Day mass.
Yes.
St. Dorothy's Day. And that continued for all those years until last year, when it became sponsored by another organisation called Changing Attitude Australia, which is has its origins in the UK, which is seeking to advance the full inclusion of gay and lesbian people in the life of the church. It's quite a big organisation in the UK, and we have one here in Australia, which is steadily expanding. And that organisation sponsors the mass, and it came to St. Mark's because of its history and my keenness to do it. Partly because to build on that history we have of dealing with people in their absolute grief, but also to say in this day and age, because it's a quite different picture, of being able to say and celebrate that there are gay and lesbian people in the church, and that it is okay to be so, and we need to stand up and be noticed, because it's our church too.
So what's the message of the mass that you're doing for Midsummer?
The message? Well,
what's the topic?
The preacher I've invited to preach on Friday night, Professor Peter Sherlock, who is the Vice-Chancellor of the Melbourne College of... But my MCD, University of Divinity, is very intelligent, he was witty, well-read, and I haven't asked him what he's going to say.
Okay.
I usually give people freedom to work on that themselves.
Goodness me, you could say anything.
I know. And I may get to fulfil my long dream of getting up and saying, that's quite enough.
I've lost my spot. you've been actively involved with helping those who are seen as on the fringes of society, predominantly through your community centre. What led St. Mark's to open their own community centre?
Well, as you said in your introduction, there's a long history of that at St. Mark's from the Depression of the 1890s, and then in the 20s and 30s, built what they call a social settlement building, which has had two gymnasia, meeting rooms, places to have recreation and assisting the poor who lived in Fitzroy. We have that disparity of very poor people and rich people all living cheek by jowl, in a sense.
And it's very noticeable in Fitzroy as well.
That's right.
Anyone who went there would know.
Yes, I was talking to somebody from Brisbane just the other day who was saying the very same thing, because you see them both in the same block. In the 1980s, a new community centre was formed, or another entity, and it's gone from strength to strength since that time. Changing in focus from time to time. At the moment, the focus of the programs is for homeless men, and which is a huge need. When you look at the figures, 100,000 people on the streets, or in some degree of not having a place that is their own, the need is great. And so we provide a place where they can have a shower, food, get scripts for medication and all those sorts of things.
Mm. How can people attend your Mass this weekend then? Where are you?
This weekend is the Midsummer Mass is on Friday night at 7 p.m.
Okay.
And on Sunday at 9:30.
Okay, fantastic. And that is stmarksfitzroy.com.
Is
that right?
Or St. Mark's Fitzroy, all one word, .com.
Fantastic. Stuart, thank you so much for joining us.
Joy 94.9.
And you're on the Spirit Lounge, and you're with Joy, Andrew and Bertie. And we got a message that we thought was a bit odd, but we're told this is from your recycle centre. not the actual centre, but an actual person. It's actually from Trevor, who's in the 40% we talked about. and he said St. Mark's Recycled is listening in. A little bit of self-promotion. Well, there's nothing wrong with self-promotion, is there?
What's the recycle centre?
Isn't that devotion to the task of running? Well, St. Mark's Recycled is our opportunity shop, and Trevor was part of the whole group of people who reinvented it a few years ago to make it, look a bit more smart. But it has two. People donate clothes and various other things, which we sell at reasonable prices. And we also, it's also another adjunct to the work of the community centre, so we give people who are desperate for some clothing or various other things a voucher to go down and there. But that's administered by the community centre.
So do you also train people up into retail?
It's one of our
goals.
Work
in retail? Yeah.
It's one of our goals to do that. Yes, we haven't got a program about that, but that would be a great thing to do.
It sounds like you're doing an amazing job there.
So with the community centre, we were talking before that you run this community centre. It is in Fitzroy, where there's a visible disparity between the very, very rich and the very, very poor. And I was kind of thinking during the break, how is it that you can run a community centre and cater for the needs of the whole community? Is it catering to the needs of those who are extremely wealthy and those who are suffering from being very poor, or is it primarily one or the other?
Well, the community centre's focus is primarily with those who are very poor, mostly because they don't have the support networks or the resources that most of us have. For the wealthy, look, we have for those who are well off or comparatively, we have beautiful grounds, in a sense, around that. It's a great blessing to have a nice lawn in front of the church, and the whole community use that. So not only the clients who come to the centre, but families come, and one of our neighbours comes and blows bubbles, and I've watched this from my study, and it's a lovely place where people congregate, and so there's a sense of getting a bit in touch with the spiritual there too, I think.
So really the whole community can connect in.
It's the hub. Well, Stuart, it's been great having you here. Thank you so much.
I've loved coming.
For anyone who would like to go to, it's Friday or Sunday, is that right?
Yes. Friday for the Midsummer Mass, and then Sunday Mass as always.
Great, that. It's stmarksfitzroy.com. And now we have the Scissor Sisters.
Joy 94.9.
And you're on the Spirit Lounge with the priest, the Pom and the Poof. And thank you to Graham from South Yarra, who says he loves this show. We love you too, Graham. And also to Gigi, who thanks Andrew, well, it was Andrew, for putting up the reminder on social media.
Onto my social media page. I'm quick on social media, you know, sometimes I am. Now, I want to thank our very lovely guest, Rebecca Forgas, earlier in the show. She came in to share a little bit about her upcoming upcoming speaking gig that she's got at the Jewish Museum of Australia. If you'd like some more information about that, visit jewishmuseum.com.au. And also, we just had Stuart Soley into the studio. He's from St. Mark's Fitzroy. Find out all about their community at stmarksfitzroy.com/church. And that's it.
It's goodbye from the priest.
We sound like we're all falling asleep, don't we?
It's goodbye. I'm trying a new sexy voice.
Everyone better wake up.
And good evening. It's goodbye from the priest.
And the pom.
And the poof.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.